From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for July 19th, 2019. There's a lot of stuff happening this weekend. Festa Italiana at the lakefront, Waukesha County Fair at Waukesha, and in Oshkosh, the EAA starts this Monday. And because it's not hot enough in Milwaukee, the Brewers are on the road in Arizona. Okay, after crashing her car into a tree, the driver was arrested for DWI. She told the cop she couldn't be drunk because she only drank one Corolla. Well, I didn't know you could drink a whole Toyota. And keeping with the theme, a Canadian driver, because he didn't have a child seat, strapped his two-year-old to a 30-can case of beer on the front seat. The kid's going to be okay. But can you just imagine the lecture his wife gave him when he got home? And finally, Alabama officials are warning people to not flush legal or illegal drugs down the toilet. State officials fear the practice will result in zombie alligators. And you can't make this stuff up. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Mark Amateus, Paige Radke, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
So, Max, why does Alabama come up a lot on this show?
They deserve it.
Well, folks, the market traded sideways this week after hitting records on Monday. The Nasdaq shed 1.2%, losing 98 points to close at 8146. Meanwhile, in the broader markets, the S&P stock composite 500 lost 1.2%, losing 37 points to close at 2977, slipping below the 3,000 mark. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 176 points this week, losing 0.6%. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York, with the Dow finishing the week at 27,156. Year to date, what's not to like? NASDAQ up 23.5%, including dividends. Broader markets up 20%, and the Dow up a nice 17.9%. You know, Kyle, the market had been doing really well in June into the first couple of weeks in July. We seem to be trading sideways as earnings season comes out. You know, the analysts are expecting a 3% decline in second quarter profits year over year. You get a lot of companies that are warning about their earnings. 80 of the 500 stocks in the S&P are cautioning about their growth prospects for the rest of the year. So as a result, market's just going sideways.
You know, I think you look at earnings reports this week, and it was a pretty decent week for what came out. And yet again, as you mentioned, you look ahead, and really that's what the stock markets do, is not look at what we're reporting. We already knew that was coming, but we look at what's coming down the road. And so a bit concerning to see some of that suggestion that maybe growth isn't going to be as positive as we thought it was. The good news, though, is that we've got a little bit of cushion there. You know, you look at forecast earnings through the end of this year, maybe not that great, but you get back into 2020 and we're back towards a more typical, potentially low double-digit earnings growth rate. And so I think that's, you know, a positive that's hanging out there for stocks, that while we're muddling along a little bit here right now, you know, maybe that's just a little bit of payback, allowing the markets, or allowing earnings to catch back up to where the markets have run, with the markets running so far. So I think clients should expect that this can probably continue for a little while. You know, it doesn't mean things have to fall apart, but it certainly means that we might be trading sideways for a bit longer here.
Kyle, you and I both know that the markets tend to look in advance 6 to 9 months, clearly focusing on the prospects for a 9.5% earnings increase the first quarter next year. As FactSet reports, a 12% increase potentially. A little hard to guess that far out in advance, but 12% increase in earnings for the second quarter next year. And I'm always struck by how fairly accurate the market is as a forward indicator. I mean, think about the market tanking in the fourth quarter last year because earnings just didn't do so well, basically flat for the first quarter. Now the market's coming back strongly this year in anticipation of pretty nice profits next year.
And it's so interesting, Bob, that it's not just here in the U.S., but you look globally as well. You know, you look at the Europe Stoxx 600 Index, which is kind of this broad measure of European stocks, and they're going through much the same thing right now with European companies kind of on the verge of an earnings recession right now. And yet, when you look at the performance of global stocks year to date, they've had a great year as well. And I think a lot of it, you know, as you mentioned, is looking past what's a bit of a rough stretch right now, looking past what, you know, is a bit of a decline year over year in earnings and getting back to hopefully in 2020 what I think is a more typical rate of earnings growth.
Paige, about every time the market goes up, I'll read an article the next day that says that investors are hoping for a rate cut. You know, there are all sorts of reasons for the markets to go down these days, but everybody's pointing to a rate cut. Potentially it'll come out on July 31st when the Fed meets again. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so I know recently, obviously, there's been a lot of talk of rate cuts going forward. I think at this point, interest rate cuts are fully priced in, or at least a 25 basis point cut in July has been fully priced in. And now we've gotten to that point where rather than talking about a 25 basis point cut, we're talking about a 50 basis point cut. And I think that's something that is probably a little bit more unlikely, and that's what the Fed has indicated as well. Economic indicators haven't indicated that we have an imminent risk of a recession. They're worried about a slowdown in global growth. Obviously, there's the increase in the trade policy uncertainty. And first and foremost, they're looking at that pullback in inflation. So as you know, the Federal Reserve has two main things that they look at, and that's inflation and employment. Employment is where they want to see it, and now as inflation starts to pull back a little bit, that's when we're going to see them start to reevaluate the interest rates and maybe see some more rate cuts going forward.
Which leads me to believe, Paige, that if we only get a 25 basis point rate cut at the end of July, investors could be disappointed. I read that Jay Powell, giving a speech in Paris the other day, you know, setting the stage to potentially broaden the Fed's mandate beyond inflation and employment, as you mentioned, to look more at the slowdown in global growth really being the push behind lower rates, a little bit outside the Fed's mandate there. So it's interesting how he's bringing that into the conversation repeatedly here this last month, not only in testifying in front of Congress, but in the speech that he gave in Paris the other day, to use as a potential reason for lower rates.
Yeah, and I think when we're looking at the Fed, too, we always have to ask, should they be precautionary or should they be reactionary, right? So right now, they seem to be taking the more of a precautionary route. They want to lower rates before they have to, rather than reacting to lower rates. And like you said, a big piece of that for them right now is the global slowdown. So it'll be interesting to see if they allow that to make them more precautionary going forward.
Mark, for years, we've all talked about interest rates and earnings driving stock prices higher or lower. I thought this on the eve of the Fed potentially cutting rates at the end of the month, be a good opportunity to refresh everybody's memory on why lower interest rates matter. So I'll set it up and then pass it to you that the stock market is a discounting mechanism. They tend to extrapolate earnings into the future, discount by interest rate to come up with a present value. So the lower the interest rate, the greater is the discounted value, the discounted present value of future earnings.
Right, Bob. And, you know, when you think back to the financial crisis and you look at, you know, what the Federal Reserve did with lowering rates down to nearly zero, you know, a big reason for that is just because they knew that if, you know, to get the economy rolling, they wanted people to put their money into, quote unquote, risk assets, commodities, stocks, real estate, bonds. Well, you're not going to do that if you can get a safe 5 or 6%, you know, on fixed income. And on the other side, take a lot of risk. So, you know, that's a real dynamic that investors look at. Hey, maybe I don't want to go into stocks real heavily, but boy, what's the alternative? You know, so I think that feeds a lot into it.
Mark, I think one of the things we have to look at there that you hit on, you know, so nicely is the idea that not only are investors willing to take more risk when they're paid for it, but that they should be paid more for that risk. And so when you look now at what the 10-year Treasury is yielding or what we expect the overnight rate's going to yield when the Fed starts to make those cuts, and you start to consider what are the alternatives to that Treasury rate, what's the alternative to safe money right now, If you want to get better yield, you could reach out and buy junk bonds. That's certainly an opportunity. Maybe not the right opportunity, given that you're not being compensated for that risk. And so what it likely means is that rather than reach to high yield or bank loans or some area of the fixed income market, it's pushing investors more towards the stock market, which is supporting those stock prices, because the alternatives are, you know, as you mentioned, such low rates on the fixed income side.
Well, and sort of bringing that back to the valuation piece that Bob was talking about, when you're looking at interest rates as a discount mechanism, you know, a dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow. So when you bring those dollars back from tomorrow back into today's dollars using that lower interest rate, what you're actually saying is, you know, $1 a year from now is worth more if that interest rate is lower.
All goes to show you that when the Fed lowers interest rates, most investors have been conditioned to not fight the Fed, to take advantage of it, because it does tend to send valuations higher. Joel, let's bring you into the show. We had really strong retail sales in June. As you know, the Commerce Department reported the other day that retail sales rose 0.4% in June. That's the fourth consecutive month of rising retail sales, 70% of the economy. That's got to look pretty good.
That's right, Bob. That's a real positive. And that was, as you said, the fourth month in a row. But it was also broad gains. They have 13 categories of retailers. Only two of them showed declines, and one of them was gas stations. And that was just because the price of gasoline was down. It's also a good sign that restaurants did well as far as sales in June, because that's a sign that people are, that consumers are feeling free with their money. That's one of the first things when people have some extra cash in their wallet, they run out and buy some food.
So good news on retail, good news on manufacturing, bad news on housing.
Yeah, so you know, as Paige was pointing out before, I mean, a lot of the indicators that we're seeing aren't necessarily showing, you know, a bad economy in the U.S., but the housing economy hasn't been going great guns. It probably, as far as recovering from the Great Recession, probably peaked so far. It seems that the peak was around late 2017, early 2018. So we had numbers this week on housing starts and building permits. Some of those are still at levels that are about half of what they were before the recession. So they really haven't even recovered from the recession. And the main thing to look at for those is single family houses for permits and as well as starts, and those have been lagging behind. But again, they're still higher than they were, you know, right after the recession, so there is still some strength there. But that retail number, the consumer spending, is something to really hang a hat on right now.
Kyle, it seems the question that I get more often than any other question these days is, Bob, how long are the good times going to last? So if you could do us all a favor and answer that, and, you know, I don't need the exact date.
Sure.
But, you know, give me a month or so of when all this is going to peak out, so I know what to tell everybody.
Well, thanks for putting me on the spot here, Bob. You know, I think it's inevitable, right, that it is going to end. Things don't go to the moon, but, you know, I think to try to say what's the end date for this, what's the expiration, it's probably a futile effort. When you look at the fact that, you know, we look at all this economic data week to week, it shows an economy that's slowing, certainly. When you look at some of the market data that shows that, you know, earnings have slowed down, but we might see a little bit of a reacceleration there, it becomes even trickier to say, well, okay, this is the day when we're going to cross from growth over to, you know, a decline in the economy, or growth over to a decline in earnings, or this is the absolute day that it matters. And even if I could tell you, here's the day, Bob, the challenge is that the markets are probably ahead of us on that. And so if I can tell you, well, 3 months from now, we're going to know for sure that we're in a recession. But if I don't know the length of that recession, if I don't know how severe that recession is going to be, that doesn't mean all that much to you, because the market might have already priced that in. The market might have already moved past that. By the time we all feel terrible about the economy, it's probably far too late to get out. And so what are you going to do even if you know the day that that recession starts, or the day that that market, that earnings decline starts? Probably not very much. I think that the key that we've learned from doing this for so many years is that you position for everything. You understand that bad things can happen, that they tend to be short-term in nature. And if you're building a well-balanced portfolio, if you're building a portfolio that's set to weather those storms, you don't need to be able to predict the exact day. And more importantly, even if you can predict that exact day, as I said, you don't need to be able to say here's the top and here's the bottom.
You know, I look at forward earnings right now, give or take it 17 times. Not all that expensive when you look at how low interest rates are and when you factor in how low inflation is. 17 times forward earnings doesn't seem all that pricey.
No, not at all. And the great news there is when you look overseas, things look even a little bit more cheap. And I think the challenge overseas is, yeah, maybe it's cheap for a reason. Some of it certainly is. But when you're a global investor, not just focused here in the U.S., but when you look more globally, not only are things maybe reasonably priced here, but from a global perspective, developed markets broadly a little bit underpriced, emerging markets broadly certainly underpriced. And again, the challenge there is that some of that stuff is cheap for a reason, and that's why it's so important to understand what it is you're buying, to understand what it is you're getting yourself into, because it's not enough to buy stuff that's cheap. You've got to make sure that you're getting a deal on what you're buying.
You know, forecasting has always been a tricky business. Economists aren't all that good at forecasting recessions for a reason. There's just too many variables involved. It's pretty hard to look at all the variables and suggest that you see a clear direction. But as you know, Kyle, economists talk about inflection points, the point at which economies start reaccelerating. So I think it'll be critically important in the next 3, 4, 5 months to really drill into the inflection points. We know that GDP was at about 2.9% last year, going to be about 2% this year, about 1% next year. So it's pretty easy to identify the trend. We're slowing. So I think the $64,000 question will be what will potentially allow the inflection point sometime next year to allow the economy to reaccelerate. The obvious one will be lower interest rates. If the Fed lowers the end of this month, you know, economists talk about how long does it really take for the effects of those lower rates to kick into the economy. Some folks think it can be almost a year. So let's suggest that the Fed lowers by 75 basis points between now and the end of the year. The point then is sometime next summer into the fall, give or take, the effects of those lower rates will start to kick in. And then the other thing that we were talking about the last couple of podcasts is, you know, the very real potential for a pickup in productivity growth. Output per man hour worked, how many pens can you make an hour, that kind of thing. We talked last time about some anecdotal evidence, but it's interesting to see that it's showing up in the statistics now, and it's one of the only ways to increase aggregate net worth is to make more pens an hour, as they say. And after being flat as a pancake for almost 10 years, that productivity is in the 2.5% range. Anecdotal evidence has only been going on for a couple of months yet. Should that continue, that might also be another inflection point for the economy and the markets.
And the thing I think investors need to appreciate about that is it provides opportunity. It provides areas for investors to be compensated for taking risk. And so when you look at some of the areas we talk about now where we've maybe been backing off risk, that doesn't mean that we're backing off it entirely. It just means we're looking for those new opportunities. And so, you know, certainly I think having some potential hope for what comes a year, 18 months from now means that you continue to lean into some of those opportunities.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. We enjoyed doing the show. Tell everybody you know about the program. The audience continues to grow. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.